It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a Wisconsin high school student wrote a fairy tale about a century ago inspired by the local landscape. We'll talk to an illustrator who worked on a new book that brings that story to life. First, Canada is citing nearly 200 alleged trade violations against the United States in a complaint it's bringing before the World Trade Organization. Among the concerns are issues with tariffs and the way the U.S. sells some of its goods in other countries. The United States has challenged those accusations. U.S. trade officials have said that the complaint would overall benefit China. Mark Koplovich is with us. He's an associate professor of political science and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. In a nutshell, what is Canada saying here?
So Canada has brought a case against the U.S. and the World Trade Organization. One of the things the WTO broadly moves countries towards negotiated reductions in trade barriers, tariffs and quotas. One of the things you're allowed to do is put up barriers to trade for certain reasons, having to do with things like anti-dumping, which is a country selling goods overseas for a lower price than they would at home, or countervailing duties, which are to offset illegal subsidies. And so Canada is effectively alleging that the process by which the U.S. does that is illegal, and that they have imposed various barriers to trade, not just for Canada, but across a whole swath of major economies.
And this seems like a weird thing. Usually a country is going to come in and say, we are the aggrieved party here. It seems like Canada's saying we and lots of other countries are being hurt by this. And by the way, other countries maybe join in with us here.
Yes. So often, you know, most often a case in the WTO will be about a certain sector, a certain industry, and it'll be a bilateral dispute. Canada here, they've listed 25 pages of violations, as you said, against the European Union, Japan, Italy, Brazil, Korea, China, etc. And they're alleging basically that the process, that the U.S. is imposing duties that are too high, that they're improperly calculating rates, that they're doing this retroactively. And so it's really a broadside against U.S. trade policy broadly.
And candidate Donald Trump obviously was very vocal about NAFTA and a lot of international trade agreements. What Canada is alleging, is this stuff that has happened since Donald Trump became president, or does this go back before that?
So there's been an increase. There's been about a 50% increase. Canada, the United States, the industrialized countries all use these anti-dumping and countervailing duties. The Trump administration has been doing it more. But more broadly, Canada is doing this in reaction to the Trump administration's general opposition to international trade and its general opposition to trade institutions like NAFTA and the World Trade Organization.
Yeah, this all comes as this renegotiation process is going on with NAFTA. We're hearing even today from White House officials, we're going to renegotiate this thing significantly or we're going to bail, as has been threatened before. Is that that looming renegotiation part of what Canada is looking at here? How does that all interact?
Yeah, I think it's a strategic move on the part of the Canadian government. The Trump administration has been threatening to withdraw from NAFTA. There are negotiations starting in next week in Montreal, a new round with Canada and Mexico. And one of the things that the Trump administration wants to do in those negotiations is get rid of the court in NAFTA, which adjudicates disputes between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico on these types of duties. And so I think the Canadian government is hedging their bets a little bit, saying we're going to now move through the multilateral trade regime in the World Trade Organization and bring in other countries as well and hedge against the fact that the U.S. may be engaging in more protectionist policies in the future.
Talking to Mark Koplovich from UW-Madison, looking at a complaint brought by Canada against the United States at the World Trade Organization. What can the WTO, the World Trade Organization, do with a complaint like this?
So when something like this happens, the U.S. now has 60 days to try and settle the complaint. If they don't, then it will go through the WTO's court system. And if they would lose, then the U.S. either has to change its policies, or the countries that are involved, other countries can actually sign on as parties to this dispute now, they would be able to impose retaliatory measures against the United States. But I think broadly, you know, the contents of the dispute are important, but more broadly, this is part of the countries of the world, the major economies of the world, trying to figure out how to move forward with international trade cooperation in the absence of U.S. leadership.
I want to get into that wider issue in just a moment. I want to narrow it down a little bit to Wisconsin. Do we have products, industries at stake here?
We do. So actually, Canada is Wisconsin's largest trading partner, over 30% of our exports, and 52% of our agricultural exports go to Canada and Mexico. So you can imagine if NAFTA suddenly disappears or is renegotiated, and we go back to the days before the 1990s with higher trade barriers, the data I've seen suggests that we could see 20 to 60% higher tariffs on dairy products, for example. The other thing is that manufacturing firms in North America now produce in all three economies because they've treated it as a single market. So you have exporters that are also importing inputs of production from Canada and Mexico.
And now to the bigger picture issues you were talking about there. There seem to be two attitudes toward trade generally. One, trade is overall a good to all parties who sign on. Yeah, there are short-term winners and losers. One country might do a little better today. One sector might do a little worse tomorrow. But overall, we're all doing better because we're trading more freely. Mm-hmm. The other one looks at it as more of a zero-sum game. If you're winning, I must be losing. And it seems like the United States, I mean, that's basically how President Trump has expressed it. What changes when the United States switches from that one concept to the other?
Yeah. So, you know, fundamentally, since the days of Adam Smith, we think about trade increases aggregate welfare, both nationally and the world, but it has these winners and losers and distributional consequences. The way Donald Trump thinks about trade is a very historical way in mercantilist ways where we think about winners and losers, and it's all zero sum. And the problem with that is the U.S. has been the centerpiece since 1947 of the international trade regime, where we have set up rules and institutions to move towards free trade. And countries are very worried now that the U.S. is abdicating that role. And the U.S., the Europeans, the Japanese, the Canadians are thinking about their own regional trade agreements and, you know, pushing forward in a world where the U.S. maybe is not as pro-free trade as it has been in the past.
Is it possible that if the United States withdraws more from international trade that, as you say, other countries will look to enhance their deals with each other? We could be long-term losers if that happens?
I think so, yeah. I mean, definitely in terms of growth and wealth in the United States, withdrawing from the international trade system is going to have short-term and medium-term costs. The longer-term cost is if we re-engage down the line, you have the Canadians and the EU have just signed a free trade agreement. The EU and Japan are negotiating a free trade agreement. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is moving forward without the U.S. now. If and when the U.S. re-engages down the line, we are engaging with institutions and agreements that we were not at the table negotiating. And the U.S., as the most powerful, you know, country in the world, has more or less gotten what we've wanted out of the negotiations of past trade agreements.
But people look at this and say, okay, yeah, there are in certain sectors and places people who lose out, including here in the United States, industries that have been hurt and workers who have been displaced by the trade agreements we've signed in the past.
Yes, of course. And that's the fundamental trade-off with international trade is you don't get the increases in aggregate welfare, you know, for the country as a whole and for consumers in terms of products, lower priced products, without the distributional consequences of certain sectors and firms are winners and losers. That leads to interesting political debates about policies to compensate those who are materially hurt by international trade. But what we do know is that backing out of trade agreements and withdrawing from international trade over the long run leaves countries poorer.
Briefly, I've seen people argue that the big mistake the U.S. made is in not doing enough to help workers in particular displaced by trade agreements. That's where a lot of things went south here.
Yeah, I think trade is often a bogeyman for the state of the economy, but also, you know, the logic of free trade is also predicated on policies to compensate those who do not benefit. And those are often politically the most sensitive. And they're the ones over the last three decades now that the U.S. has really done the least to implement.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mark Koplovich is an associate professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at a trade dispute filed by Canada against the U.S. in the World Trade Organization. Coming up, we'll talk to a UW professor whose steampunk-influenced illustrations found their way into a new book inspired by a local Menominee folktale. Stay with us here on Central Time.